Welcome to the Jones Zone, a podcast by Daryl and JJ Jones, your resource for building wealth and knowledge in everything real estate. Your host, Daryl Jones, a top Orange County real estate agent, has been supporting homeowners for over 30 years. He is here to share his tips and advice, as well as insights from industry experts, to help you take your real estate game to the next level. Now, here's your host, Daryl Jones.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Jones Zone. Today, we've got Andrew Kaluzny. He's an appraiser. I've known Andrew for a few years now, and I know it's so important in a real estate transaction, of course, that every transaction that involves a loan requires an appraisal. He's going to give us the ins and outs of appraisals. So, Andrew, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you, Daryl, for having me.
Welcome. So let's just dive in. So how do you determine the value of a property during the appraisal process? What do the role of sales and comps do and everything? So tell us what your process is.
Well, the simplest way to describe it is like this. Let's assume you have a home in a track, say a Plan B in the Meadowlark track, and I have three sales of the same Plan B that took place, all closed escrow yesterday. One sold for $100,000, obviously not current day prices, and it's a basic house, nothing done to it since it was built. Second one sold for $150,000. It's been well-maintained, some upgrades, nothing spectacular. The third one sells for $200,000. It's been completely remodeled. They just finished remodeling the day before they closed escrow. So you've got this range. And so the property where I'm appraising, let's say it's just, you know, typically upgraded, but and it's got a remodeled kitchen. So I got this range. So I know I'm not worth $100,000, and I know I'm not worth $200,000. But given the comps or comparables, I'm somewhere between 150 and 200. So I've got a remodeled kitchen, so that pushes a little higher in the range. Say new paint, a little bit higher in the range. But let's say it backs up to a freeway, so that pushes it back a little bit in that range. But now we have market conditions where there's no inventory, so that pushes it up further in the range. So that's the process, really simply explained. Obviously, the devil's in the details, and that's what appraisers do, is figure out, you know, how much up and down in that range you go. But that's probably the simplest way to describe what an appraiser does and how comparables play into it. And the technical term for it is called the sales comparison approach.
Oh, okay. That makes a lot of sense. I know, it's funny. I think a lot of times people don't realize that appraisals are somewhat subjective. I mean, because, for example, back in 2009 or 10, when they passed what's called a Dodd-Frank bill and they were requiring two appraisals per transaction, I had this one property and sold it, and a buyer got in there. They had their two appraisals. Buyer had some personal issues, and we typically try to get a backup offer. In this case, we did have one. Buyer backed out after they did their two appraisals because they were required the two now. Now, obviously, they no longer do that. And then the second buyer came in there, so we had two more appraisals. So we had four appraisals done on the same exact house with no new information, and the appraisals came back at, I don't know if I ever told you this before, 618.5, 650, 670, and 619.5. And I thought, well, after having that experience, because nobody would do that for a test run because it's an awfully expensive experiment.
Right.
But I often tell people, you know, when appraisers come over, don't get me wrong, they're very good, and they typically nail it pretty close. But it's not the good Lord coming down to the planet saying the house is worth X, but obviously you guys do a good job. Now, when you go into, you do appraisals for sales, correct?
Correct.
And do you do a lot of refinances, I'm guessing?
Sales, refinances, well, not so much with interest rates recently, but yes, my business kind of consists of two specific areas, the lender work, sales, refinances, HELOCs, that type of thing. The other part of my business is more private appraisals. It's trust and estate work. A lot of date of death values for a step up in basis for tax purposes. So that's kind of the two parts of my business. So,
yeah, I get a lot of those too. And what he's referring to is whenever anybody inherits a house, the IRS is going to require you to know the value of that property at the time of death when they inherit it. And therefore, the IRS can figure out their numbers based on that number as well. So, all right. Well, I'm going to delve into it. I got a few questions here. And so what factors have the most significant impact on a property evaluation?
Well, the first one is, as realtors especially like to say, location, location, location. Mm. That's the first thing. I mean, obviously, a house down by the beach, is going to be worth more than a house inland. But beyond that, you first start getting into physical characteristics of the property, size, age, condition, remodeling, that type of thing. And then from there, once you get past the physical features of it, the market conditions come into play. What's the competitive, listing inventory?
So you look at actives as well as sold.
Look at actives as well as sold. Look how many actives are available. In fact, I was just doing some research last night, and it's kind of interesting because the market now is being affected by something it's never been affected by before, which is all these homes that have really low interest rates. And I was looking, and according to Redfin, currently in the United States, 62% of the homes have mortgages with interest rates below 4% and 28% below 3%. So that's a lot of people who and the average mortgage rate today as of the Freddie Mac information is 6.63%. So you have a large section of the market that is not really motivated to sell. So despite the fact we have these high interest rates, prices are still feeling upward pressure because of the fact that you don't have a lot of people who want to sell.
Yeah, we see it all the time. It's definitely a low inventory base. I'm actually surprised that it's not even more people. I know that there's also a tremendous amount of people who have all equity. They own it free and clear. So yeah, we're anticipating that to keep inventory lower for the upcoming years. But I tell you, nobody ever knows what's going to happen. People can guess and et cetera. But so can you explain the difference between appraised value and market value?
Certainly. Appraised value is the opinion of a professional appraiser, unbiased opinion, as of a specific date. And by comparison, market value, and I'll just read it to you, the market value that Fannie Mae uses, that all appraisers use for lending purposes, is this is how they define it. Market value is the most probable price that a property should bring in a competitive and open market under all conditions requisite to a fair sale, the buyer and seller each acting prudently, knowledgeably, and assuming the price is not affected by undue stimulus. So the key in all of that is it's probable. It's not the highest. Most homeowners, when you come to the property, they're thinking the highest price because they know everything about their property. But you have to look across the broad market in terms of what would a typical buyer be willing to pay for the property. So that's the primary difference. Whereas appraised value is as of a specific date, that the next day that appraised value might not even be relevant at all. Market value is more fluid in terms of it changes daily with the market.
No, that makes sense. Yeah, I'm reminded of this great cartoon. In fact, if we find it, maybe we'll try to put it in the video, Jeremy. Anyway, this great cartoon where it has a picture of this mansion. It talks about how a buyer sees your house, how an appraiser sees your house, how you see your house, and how the tax man sees your house.
I've seen that.
Yeah, that's hilarious. It's got this mansion for the tax man and so on and so forth. So how often should a person get their house appraised? I mean, or should they?
Well, it's not like, changing the filter in your furnace. It's not something you just do on a regular basis. For the most part, it's on an as-needed basis. If you're refinancing or getting a HELOC, or if you're inheriting a house and need a step up in basis, or if you're going to be disputing your property taxes with the assessor, it's as you need it. It's not something that you need to look at on a regular basis. In fact, it's probably better that you don't. Somewhere along the line, and I've been at this for 44 years now, houses have kind of become much less of a home and more of an investment and, how much money is it worth? And so what happens is people get wrapped around worrying about what their value is. And it's just like the stock market. If you watched your stocks go up and every day, you'd be totally stressed out and lose all your hair.
It's a lot more expensive.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You get to just glance at a screen.
It's not something you need to do on a regular basis, just as needed for whatever specific need you have at that point in time.
Yeah, that makes sense. So, oh, this is a great one. I'm so glad that. So what improvements and renovations can increase the property's appraisal value?
This is a lot of my opinion, but in terms of return on the dollar, the best thing you can do is a coat of paint by a professional painter in, and this is the key, in colors that are acceptable to the market. You know, professional painter painting your house pink is not going to add value.
Yeah.
So
no offense to all our pink.
To pink homeowners, but it's just what is, again, going back to that definition of market value, what is the typical buyer going to be looking for? So most buyers aren't looking for pink houses. So from that being pretty much, I think, the best rate of return, because you can, I mean, a professional painter, you know, inside and out, you'd probably spend, depending on the size, I mean, a typical tract house may be $10,000.
Yeah.
You're going to get your money back on that. And then from there, the next thing is a remodeled kitchen. And then next, remodeled bathrooms. And then everything beyond that, it's a sliding scale in terms of, you know, a return on investment. But those are the big three. The rest of the, you know, whatever else you want to do your house, you know, just understand you are not going to get all of, or even in some cases, any of that money back.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I get asked that a lot too. And it really will depend on where the house started at. So in other words, if the house is built in the 50s and it has the original kitchen, well, okay, maybe you'll get your money back because you're doing that much of a big difference. And then also on paint color, it's interesting. I started doing this years ago. I oftentimes tell people when they want to recommend a paint company, one great thing to do is go to the new home tracks, the model homes that may be selling in your area, because new home tracks study this data pretty well. I mean, they're spot on in this stuff. So point being is they'll study trends, they'll study paint colors, all that kind of stuff. So if you're thinking of remodeling your house, it's always nice to go to get a professional opinion. I meet with people all the time and diagnose things where they can make a lot more money. But if you want to know specific colors or trends or styles, and oddly enough, even local house tracks. I went to a housing track once in North Orange County, and they had, I think it was not granite.
Quartz.
Not quartz. They had quartz. And thank you. They had quartz, and I was and stainless steel. And I was talking to the sales lady, and I said, "Wow, you guys really know what you're doing. This house looks phenomenal." And we got to talking about other areas, and they said, "Oh yeah, we have one coming out in the desert area, or it was Riverside area." And I said, "Wow, you really do it up well with these the quartz and the stainless steel and stuff. I can't wait to see those." And she said, "Well, actually, there." We don't use quartz or stainless steel. We don't need to. So I thought, oh, interesting. So they're really even delved into that specific market. I'm sure it has to do with pricing, et cetera. But okay, no, that's good information to know. Yeah, that improvements that can raise appraisal value, that's oftentimes, I know for market value, everything you said, that and baseboards and other stuff, that just makes it have a better feel. All right, so are there any common misperceptions about the appraisal process that you frequently encounter?
Yeah, there are a few, actually. The biggest one is that most borrowers seem to think that the value is going to be different for a refi than for a sale. And as I alluded to with that definition of market value, it's the same definition for both. It's not going to change. I think what people see sometimes is that in a refi, the appraiser will bring it in, the value in for less than they think it's worth. So they think the appraiser is bringing it in low on purpose. You know, whereas sales...
On a sales, you know the sales price.
Well, you know the sales price.
You kind of got a target a little bit there.
But it's not so much a target, but it's the way an appraiser looks at it. It's another data point in terms of figuring out the market value. You know, price doesn't always equal value, and you know, which is evidenced by the fact we've had people paying over appraised value for homes now for at least the last 3 to 5 years.
Yeah.
So, but it's another data point, and you kind of, an appraiser has to take a long, hard look and understand, you know, how that price got to where it is. In fact, that's part of the requirements of an appraiser under the Uniform Standards of Professional Appraisal Practice. He has to analyze the sale. So he has to figure out why is that price what it is? And sometimes it's just there's nothing else on the market and they just pay it over and they're willing to pay that because
supply and demand.
That's what they had to do. I mean, the most extreme example I had was about 2 years ago. There's a house up in North Tustin that sold $650,000 over the asking price. And, there was no support for it, and everybody knew it, but they wanted that house, and they paid it. So,
wow.
So that's the first one. The second one is that borrowers assume that because they're paying for the appraisal, they own the appraisal. That's not correct. The appraiser has a contractual relationship with the lender. The bank is their client, and their client controls what's done with the report. So I'll have a lot of people say, can you send me a copy of the appraisal when you're done? And I'll explain, well, no, I can't because it belongs to the bank. But there are processes in place right now where all a borrower has to do is just make a request to the lender, and each lender has their own different processes of how to do it, and they can get a copy of the appraisal.
Yeah, we oftentimes do that, but yeah, you have to get the lender's copy, I guess you could say. So how do unique or specialized features a property may have affect the value of the house?
Those are what the phrase I use on my appraisals are owner-specific improvements. And for the most part, in terms of a return on the dollar, it's minimal or sometimes none or sometimes negative. But having said that, I will say this, that a house should be a home. And if you want to make an improvement that will bring satisfaction to you, and the biggest one I get is swimming pools. It'll always be a husband and a wife, and the one that wants the pool will ask me a question. It's like, let me ask you about something. And so we're thinking about a pool. What are your thoughts? And I'll say, and this is pretty much my answer for that and for a lot of home improvements that homeowners want to make. If you want to put that pool in because you think it's going to raise the value of your property by the price of the pool, it's not.
Right.
If you want to put that pool in because you have young kids and you want to create wonderful memories and have all their friends come over to the house and play while they're growing up, that's priceless. Put it in and enjoy it and don't worry about it.
Yeah.
So, but you have to separate the finance from the fact that most people seem to be beginning that a house is a home first and then sticks and stones after that.
Yeah, it's funny. Pools just don't have the draw they used to. I've been doing this for a long time. In the 90s, pools were kind of a bigger deal. And it seems as though now we oftentimes get a lot of people who request not to have a pool. So, that kind of balances out. Yeah, I've had that same question. I'll tell people the same thing. Look, it's going to cost you $60,000, $70,000. It's not going to raise the price $60,000 or $70,000. So can you provide advice our homeowners can prepare for the appraisal to maximize their property's value? What advice would you tell a homeowner to do to the property to maximize your visit?
Well, the first, and it's not that appraisers expect to walk into a pristine model home, but, just have it clean. Because it kind of, what's that old saying?
Never get a second chance for a first impression.
So, it kind of, when a person walks in, everything's kind of neat and clean. It just kind of, it will kind of, gauge in terms of how he's going to look at the property. And then let the appraiser just walk around and do his thing. He's going to measure. He's going to take photos in and out. He's going to take notes. And at the end, he should have some questions. But in addition to that, I always tell homeowners when I'm setting appointments, if you have a lot of improvements, write them down on a piece of paper. More importantly, the improvements to the major components of the house, heating, air conditioning, plumbing, electrical. Did you change out the windows? Is there insulation in the walls? All these are, you don't see them, but they're big ticket expensive items. And it helps an appraiser to, again, in moving that dial up and down, all those little things move it further up in the dial. Not so much all the cosmetic stuff. We have agreeable gray wall paint on the bathroom and the kitchen. But if you give them a list, something, and I like homeowners to do that because I just, copy it and put it in the appraisal report, because if an underwriter is reading a report and it's just written in there, they're going to gloss over it. If it's on a separate addendum page with a list saying owner, list of owner improvements, and it's bullet pointed, it helps to make the case for the property.
Well, in fact, on that point, so you go out, you do your appraisal, and then it's got to pass the desk through a desk of the underwriter. So the underwriter reviews your appraisal to make sure it seems legitimate, for lack of a better term, or proper. Is that fair to say?
Well, first it goes to a reviewer,
okay,
typically, and then from there it will go to underwriting. Reviewers will have some questions, and they'll be checking for conformance to, and well, I forgot to allude to this earlier. You know, when an appraiser is doing an appraisal, that appraised value, there's a little footnote to that. It's subject to lender guidelines or assignment conditions if it's a private property. So say, for instance, and each lender is different. Say, for instance, a house has a room addition that's not permitted. Some lenders will allow it. Some lenders will say, nope, no permit, no value. So that gets fettered out in the process in terms of review and underwriting. So sometimes the reviewer will see it and they'll call the underwriter and they sort it out. But
yeah, because you just want more kind of evidence on where this price is, why it's where it's at. So when you can write, there's a new central air, a new heater, a new all new carpet, new lighting, new appliances, new kitchen, new bathroom. I mean, I guess it sounds obvious after I hear myself say it.
Yeah. Well, when I was first learning to appraise, the thing that I remember the most is the instructor was saying, you are telling a story. Somebody reading your report, they're going to start here, and as they go through it and they read everything that you wrote, they should, when they're done, they should be able to come to the same conclusion that you did. If they're not, then you did something wrong.
Yeah, that makes sense. You know, on that note, on how it looks, we leave ours stage. We stage our listings, so we leave them stage. And even I'll tell people that, because I say appraisers are humans too, or people too.
Yes.
But because, you know, you get that vibe, you get that feel. You don't want to walk into a trash. Hey, let me ask you this. How about ADUs? ADUs have become so huge and very, very popular. How does the ADU affect the property? Do you factor? I've been always wanting to ask you this. How do you evaluate ADUs on a property?
Well, in a perfect world, an appraiser would have three similar comps without ADUs and three similar comps with ADUs, with a similar ADU. And so it's called paired sales analysis, where you compare the two, and this one sold for a house sold for 100, and this one with the ADU sold for 150. That gives you an indication, not an absolute value, but an indication an ADU might be worth 50,000. You know, the next house might have sold for 175,000. And so you end up with a range. But as a practical matter, no two ADUs are the same. And there's ages and qualities, and some are converted from garages, and some are, you know, stick built from scratch, you know, as nice as a brand new house. So it's really hard. So when I come across these, and I just did an appraisal in Yorba Linda a couple months back that had an ADU, and another way to kind of gauge the value is called, the technical term is interviewing market participants, which is basically ask real estate agents. And I know I've called and asked you questions on.
Yeah, I think that's one of the reasons why I reached out to you, is I get more calls from you than any other appraiser, because you have to do your research and talk to the listing agents on other sales, et cetera.
Yeah. So this particular appraisal, there was nothing in Yorba Linda with even remotely.
I was going to say, it's ADU. Not always easy to find something else with an ADU, a recent comp.
Yeah, they're becoming more popular. But yeah. So I pulled the agents in the process of doing this appraisal. And the range, these are real estate agent opinions of the added value of that ADU, ranged from 50,000 to 250,000. So it's as hard as you as it is for me. So now I have a range between 50 and 250. And so then I look at, you know, the finishes of the ADU and, you know, how old it is and everything else. And I just kind of, and again, it's that same process of kind of, you know, and then the markets, you know, ADUs are becoming really popular. So it's, again, it's that, it all goes back to that same kind of process of taking all the features of a property, and specifically of a specific feature, and taking them into consideration to come up with a value.
So it doesn't necessarily, what it will compel in rent, if they were to make it a rental, does that ever factor into the situation?
That's one way to look at it, and some people do, but most people that I'm seeing that are putting ADUs on properties is to create a multi-generational property. That's the big motivation right now. Now, there are people out there, there are companies who I'm seeing that are advertising, you know, we can, you know, ADU, get extra income. And then, you know, you can put in some cases an ADU and a junior ADU, And then you start getting into Senate Bill 9, which allows single-family lots to be divided into two lots.
Right.
So now, you know, some people are after. I just saw an ad last week. You know, you can put four units on your single-family zoned lot. So I'm not seeing that as the primary motivation. As society is as a whole is getting older, the multi-generational use is the primary driving factor for these.
Yeah, it's huge. We have a lot of people. I mean, that's, I think, one of the reasons why single stories are more valuable than two stories.
Yes.
And then go from there. Downstairs master would be second on that hierarchy, all the way up to your three stories. There are some three-story properties.
There's more and more.
Yeah, because they're going up.
Because land's expensive.
Yeah. So how has the advent of technology influenced the appraisal process at all?
Yes. When I first started 44 years ago, my appraisals, I went to work for Home Savings. Your viewers who remember Home Savings, my appraisal consisted of a 5x7 card, property information on the front, three comps on the back, Polaroid pictures, and we had to take this big, huge book of assessor's parcel maps, take the one out for our property, make a copy, and stick it in the report. That was 44 years ago what an appraisal consisted of. Today, my average appraisal report is about 40 to 45 pages. Now, there's a lot of photos and addendums, but it's all computer-generated, digital photos. The data is available instantaneously in real time. You know, I know a comp, you know, that is going into escrow today or tomorrow. Back then, we used to have these books called CMDC books that, you know, had, it was property information that lenders submitted to this company, CMDC, and then they would publish books for appraisers to use. So, and if you wanted to actually call a real estate agent and talk and get more information on a comp, you had to go to a real estate office and ask them to use their quarterly comp book or their tear sheets. So, but
yeah,
that's,
I remember
that's
tear sheets.
That's
yeah.
How it started. And, but now everything is online. Reports are all sent electronically and, you know, reviewed tech, you know, electronically. And they're moving, they're calling it appraisal modernization. And they're moving to the point where now they're kind of dividing up the functions of an appraisal where they're having people go out and inspect the property and take photos of the property. And the push behind it is so that way an appraiser can just deal on the analysis part of it. So,
So someone else will go do that and then shoot you over all that information.
And then
you analyze. I was going to ask, is AI going to play a role in this, I wonder?
I don't know. It's hard to say. I have reservations about it because a homeowner said this to me once. They said, you have a really hard job. And I said, why do you say that? She goes, because you have to quantify people's emotions. And it's really hard, you know, yes, you can have all this information in front of you, but if you're not in the house, if you're not walking down the hall and you're going, oh, that floor plan kind of goes clunk, or you don't hear the jets from the nearby airport going overhead, or you don't look over the back, you know, you're on the second story and you look in the house behind you, you know, hasn't been the lawn mowed in 10 years. I mean, all that stuff plays into value, and you're not, as an appraiser, you're not getting that with this system they're going to. Now, you know, change is inevitable and we'll all adjust. But, you know, I still think a boots on the ground appraiser start to finish is the best way to get a whole view of everything that affects the value of a property.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I oftentimes will get calls and asking what my house is worth. And it's the standard first answer is, well, I got to come see it because you never know, like you just mentioned, as well as just a vibe. Certain houses have this vibe, and I guess that's more to do with market value, to where you've just, it's indescribable on paper, and that's why I can't describe it. You have to be there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. Are there any regional factors or local factors that can significantly affect the property values?
Sometimes you have environmental issues. You have, I mean, like Fullerton had issues with the McCall dump site. I don't know what. 30 years ago,
oh,
40
yeah.
years ago.
Yeah.
You can have environmental issues that'll do it. But right now in the current market we're in, the regional issues that are affecting our market and lots of markets throughout the United States is just the inventory. There is just pretty much everywhere you go, the inventory. And it's this this balancing act between inventory and interest rates, and, you know, a bunch of houses come on the market, they disappear, and it's just, it's just this dance that we're going back and forth on. So that's the big thing right now that's really affecting properties on a macro level.
Very well put. So let me ask you this. I know that oftentimes when we are able to sell a house, it's a little higher than comps, which is common in an escalating market. Is it helpful for let's say that I was meeting you to appraise one of my listings. It's an escrow, and you know it's a little higher than what the comps are. Mm-hmm. Is it helpful if I were to also bring to you and show you that, hey, look, we had 15 other offers on this house, and here are the other offers, and let's say we're trying to get it in. You keep saying 100. I got to make it a little more realistic. Let's add another zero.
Zero, yeah.
A million. And we're trying to get a million. Is it helpful to you if the agent can show, hey, look, we've got these 10 other offers, and this one was at 990. We have another one at a million. We have another one at 995, et cetera, et cetera. When let's say the comps are at 9, or is that no?
It does helpful. Again, it's part of what I talked about earlier, analyzing the sale. And that's important. That tells the appraiser, it tells the review appraiser, it tells the underwriter, there's a lot of demand for this particular property. So that's helpful. But ultimately, and if an appraiser can find, you know, in the market we've been in a lot of appraisals I was doing, I was finding pending sales to help kind of support, you know, to, again, tell the story to reviewers and underwriters that, look at, this is what the market's doing. And we don't have a lot of sales, but these pending sales are telling me that, you know, we're trending in this direction. So, you know, with that, you know, my value is going to be at the top of the market. Now, if I don't have any comps, even after adjusting, that can make that jump to where the sales price is, I'm kind of stuck. But at least, you know, I have no reservations about, you know, coming up with an appraised value that's at the top of the market, because, you know, there's no inventory, the house is, you know, all these wonderful features, and there's all these offers. You know, and some appraisers will, you know, ask to see all the other offers. Some of these cases, I have 15, 17 offers, and I don't want to review 17 purchase contracts. But it does help. Again, it's anything that an appraiser can get to help him understand what is driving the value of a property is helpful.
Yeah, that makes sense. Define comps.
A comp is technically, it's called a comparable sale. And what it is, it's a property that has features that give an appraiser an indication of what his property with those similar features, his or her property that she's appraising, have the same features, what that's worth in the marketplace. Again, this is all—it's all driven by the market. An appraiser's just trying to understand the market. So, with that being said, the first thing to understand, and I tell everybody, is a sales price is just a number on a piece of paper till you know the story behind it. You know, I'll have people hand me comparables. You know, especially when you know agents will hand me comparables and say, you know, I know this is high. These are the comparables. But you have to really look and see, are they comparable? Because, you know, let's say a property using today's numbers sold for $1 million, and the agent and the house has 3,000 square feet and was built in 4 bedrooms, 2 baths. So they give me comparables that sold for $1 million, but they have 4,500 or 5,000 square feet, and they're on half acre lots, and they're brand new. So all that's not a comparable property, and they're looking just at the price. But as a comparable because of the features of the property, not because of the price.
Now, and would it be fair to say that also you want to look at proximity too? In other words, here's the subject property. The closer the comp is in distance to the actual house, the more relevant it would be?
Yes.
Somewhat?
Yeah, no, it's because that is the market that you're in. The farther away a comparable is, the greater the probability, greater the likelihood that it's going to put limitations on the accuracy of that value. Because the farther away you get, the more there's a lot of other things playing into the value of a property. But, you know, again, it's location. Like, for instance, in, you know, Yorba Linda, going to the Yorba Linda High School is a valuable feature for some people. So you want to have, you know, if you're giving comparables, you want to have something that has that. But if you're not in the district, well, then, you know.
Right. So you have to keep it as similar as possible.
Yeah. So, but again, it's concentrating on the features, not the price.
So what do you do? Because this has happened a lot, especially with inventory being low and everything. You know, you have a certain track. There's no comps in that track. Then you just go to the very next track. Is that fair to say? That has similar age, size, et cetera.
Yes. It's called a similar competing neighborhood.
Okay. And then do you ever go outside of the city?
Yeah. Depending on the property. Yeah. Depends on if it has features that are so unique that a buyer... And again, it's you're looking at what would a typical buyer do if they want a property with this specific feature?
Hey, let's even define a feature. And what comes to my mind, and sorry to interrupt, but is the vintage homes built in the 20s or the 30s? Is that possibly something like that?
Yeah, that is. Orange. All the Eichlers in Orange. You know, when I do an appraisal of an Eichler home in Orange, I go to my comps are in one of the three Eichler tracks in Orange. That's the only place I go, and they're all more than a half a mile apart from each other. And I will go back in time if I have to go back in time, because Eichler buyers, and this is just one particular type of property, but Eichler buyers are very specific. They want that property because it's an Eichler, and so you can. That's when you can go afield, because you're mimicking or you're reflecting what a typical buyer would do for that type of property.
Yeah, those are popular homes. Those are very sweet. My brother-in-law got a house, and it's kind of like an Eichler home. It's he remodeled. It's just phenomenal. So regarding comps, and what is a comp? So let me ask you this, because you brought up the great example of someone bringing in, you're trying to comp out a 3,000 square foot home, and they bring out 4,500 square foot home. What I know, isn't there a formula? So for example, let's say it's a 3,000 square feet. You use comps that are only 10% bigger or 10% smaller, or is there a formula such as that?
There's no formula. Again, you're looking for a comparable property that reflects what a buyer of your property would want. You know, if they want an Eichler, they're only going to look at Eichlers. If they want...
Let's say they want view home. No?
Nah. Okay. Not so much a view home, because, I mean, you can get... view. I mean, something unique, like, say...
Ocean view.
Let's say a 10 car garage or a 12 car garage. Hmm. There's a limited market for that, but there are more than just a few car collectors car enthusiasts. There we go. Yeah. That, you know, for them, that's a real desirable feature. And to build, you know, a 10 or 12 car garage is a lot of money. So if I'm doing a property that, you know, has a feature like that, I'm going to go and try to find something that clearly shows that, because normally, I mean, you can prove that is adding a lot of value. So it just kind of depends on the feature.
Well, let me ask you this, because that's a great example. There's probably only going to be one. What happens if there's only one house with a 10-car garage? Do you ever factor in, for example, the cost to build that garage? Or
it comes into play, but then we go back to interviewing market participants. Mm. It's okay. You know, Mr. Real Estate Agent, you know, if you had a buyer that had this house and, you know, it had a 10-car garage, or it didn't have a 10-car garage and they wanted one, how much do you think your buyer would be willing to pay for that? And I'd probably get a range of $50,000 to $250,000, because it's really hard. It's just, I mean, for some people, it's really valuable. For some people, it's worthless.
Right.
So it's kind of buyer dependent. That's where we go back to that owner specific improvement.
And I know you're diligent, because you've called me. I think you and I have spoken more than my dad and me. I'm just joking. Because you've called me all the time. And you have great questions, et cetera. So you definitely do your homework. I mean, that's probably a side note. But so tell me this. What should homeowners do when they disagree with the appraisal? Any advice?
That never happens. Yeah. The first thing is read the report. Cover back to front. Try to understand how the appraiser got to where he got. Look at his comps. Look at what he's, you know, what he's considering comparable. Look at his description of the marketplace. Read it. Don't just focus on the value. So that's a starting point. The next thing is, and lenders, different lenders have different procedures for disputing values with appraisers. Most of them will allow them to make, you know, it's like, tell us where you think the appraiser missed something is the first part of it. And then they'll say, okay, we'll provide us comparables. And you don't want to, you want to pick, you know, find a, you know, if it's for a refi or something, find a local real estate agent to help you out and pull, and just pull three or four that are truly comparable. No, don't send, I mean, I had one that they sent me, you know, 35 comps just printed straight off the MLS. You know, no, I can't go through it. I mean, that's more work than the original appraisal to analyze 35 additional sales. So it's just, you know, be focused in terms of, you know, understand what where the appraisal is coming from. If you still disagree, you know, tell them why and say, I think these are better because. And that's pretty much all you can do. Yeah. And then sometimes, depending on the lender, some it'll go to the review department first, the appraisal department. They'll look at it. If they think there's no case, I'll never even hear about it. If the reviewer thinks, okay, maybe you might want to look at a couple of these, I'll get a call or an email, and I'll look at them, and we talk about it. And so, you know, I'm not right 100% of the time.
99.
Yeah. you're being very kind. But and the other thing to understand about appraised values is that, you know, even though it's one number on a piece of paper, realistically, it's a range. You know, it's plus or minus, you know, in a neighborhood with a lot of data and, you know, good comparables that you can verify, you're talking, you know, maybe 3 to 5% plus or minus. You know, just like if, you know, you brought five buyers in that property, they're not all going to offer the same thing because their motivations are different. So it just depends on how one appraiser analyzes the market. But when you, and again, depending on the property, once you start getting above 5%, 7%, if you have those, like you were talking earlier, there was one that was like 50, 60,000 above all the others. You know, that's an outlier. And, you know, that's one that either the other appraisers totally missed the boat or this guy missed the boat. And then you kind of have to look at that.
Yeah, I often, because we do kind of a similar thing in terms of evaluating properties and telling people what they would likely sell for. And I always tell people, oftentimes I think they do want an exact number. And I say, look, it literally is impossible to give you an exact number of what this will sell for prior to going on the market. I can give you a ballpark, a range, and because it's real. It's the only, until you go on the market.
Right.
You know, prior to. Oh, and another thing, too, I wrote down in my notes because I just had this happen to me last night. So the city of Anaheim and Anaheim Hills, they're both called Anaheim, but Anaheim Hills is, I would say, more valuable than Anaheim. And whenever, if an agent from out of the area lists a home and doesn't realize that and they don't know to put it in Anaheim Hills, it'll show up as Anaheim, and that'll decrease the value of that home in terms of the eventual sales price because people who are looking in Anaheim Hills don't pull up Anaheim.
Right.
And so you can bring up that type, if let's say an appraiser had used that for a comp. I'm getting prepared for this house that I'm going to sell. That's the case, believe me. So how do you stay updated on market trends and changes in the property values?
You read what's on the internet. I mean, what the market's doing, what interest rates are doing, what, you know, you listen to what the economists think are going to happen. But my best data source for what the market is doing is when I call on my comps, when I talk to real estate agents. And I know I've asked you this question probably every time I've called you, mm-hmm. is like, you know, prices right now. Do you think they're going up, going down, stable, you know, and, you know, what do you think? So, you know, I take the feedback from all the agents because, you know, you guys are at the front line of this battle, so to speak. You guys are dealing with this every day. Even if I have a comp that closed escrow yesterday, it reflects a market that's anywhere from 30 to 45 days old. So, you know, that's where it's important for an appraiser to call agents to understand what's going on right now. You know, and, you know, and if a property's sitting, you know, if everybody else has, you know, marketing times of 3 to 8 days and you're looking at a comp and it took 98 days to sell, well, there's a question there, you know, why? And so, you know, is that an anomaly or is the market shifting? So that's where I, in my practice, you know, get current market data. It's from talking to people who are entrenched in it.
Yeah, you're very diligent about that. Now, well, let me ask you this. Tell me, do you have a really interesting story from an appraisal that you've done? What's something that's memorable?
I mean, there's two interesting properties I appraised that have stuck with me my entire career. One was a property that had about a 600-foot train track that ran around the property with a steam engine and a car that carried passengers in it. And the train had come from a plantation in Hawaii, and it was inside, it was a community with a homeowners association. And this particular homeowner had permission to only pull that train out X number of days per year.
It was a train in the back?
It was surrounded, yeah. The lot was about an acre and a half, and it ran.
What city?
It was in Kota de Kaza.
Okay.
And it ran around the entire property. It was awesome. I mean, it was a beautiful train. But it's just, never, ever
find a comp
have I before or since seen anything like that. And that was really interesting. And then the other thing was, I had appraised a home in Riverside. It was about 15,000 square feet. About half of it, the bottom floor, was basically a nightclub. It was a dance floor, a bandstand, professional music system, commercial kitchen, bathrooms with urinals in Riverside.
Is that where Snoop Dogg's house?
No.
I'm joking.
No, he has a home in Diamond Bar.
That's right.
At least one of his homes.
That's right.
And the story behind it was, when this homeowner was younger, he had a country western band. And he wasn't really famous, but he was moderately popular. And this band stuck together through his entire life. And so he became successful in another field. And he built this dream house, cost him $5 million. But so he built this lower level, and his band was still playing pretty much almost till the day he died. They would put on shows down there for friends. And it was just, I mean, you talk about having to go distance for comps. I mean, number one, there's not a lot of 15,000 square foot houses in Riverside. I mean, I was down in Temecula, Murrieta, looked a little in Palm Springs. But again, somebody looking for a house that big is going to, look a farther afield. But, that was really kind of an interesting thing. But my best memory of appraising is actually has nothing to do so much with houses. It has to do with people. And this job really is about people. I mean, you're dealing with in the biggest investments of their lives. So there was this woman who had sold a house in the San Fernando Valley and had bought one in Tustin and followed all the rules so she could move her property taxes. And she moved to be close to her family and especially her grandkids. And she was in her late 70s. And somebody from the assessor's office came out and said, "You didn't follow the rules correctly. Your house is worth more than your house in the San Fernando Valley. So we raised your taxes." So here's this poor woman that, is now suddenly is going to have to sell this house because she can't afford her taxes. Well, I went down. I'd never done a tax appeal appraisal. And I went down and I talked to the people at the assessor's office to kind of find out the rules. And I end up talking to one of the higher ranking appraisers in that office. And to make a very long story fairly short, this gentleman was really nice and explained the situation. I explained to him and we talked back and forth. And ultimately he says, "We made a mistake." And
can fight City Hall.
Yes, you can. It's everybody complains about the assessor's office. I've been dealing with them for years. They are truly some of the nicest and most helpful people I deal with in my job. So this lady was able to keep her house and stay. And I got this letter. I still get goosebumps from it because I think it's the best thing I ever did in my career. I got this beautiful letter from her saying how, "Thank you so much. I'm going to be able to live the rest of my life in my house near my grandkids and everything else, and I couldn't have done it without you."
Well, I'm getting chills.
I don't know about that, but that's why after 44 years I still enjoy being an appraiser, because it's the people that make it fun and interesting. I mean, appraising a house is appraising a house, but it's the people that make it fun.
Special place in heaven for that move right there.
I hope.
That was very nice. So, Andrew, I think that concludes our episode on appraisals. And you, I knew, I tell you, when I thought, okay, we need to have an appraiser on there, I didn't even think of anyone else other than you. You are the hardest working appraiser I know, based on the phone calls that I get. That's for darn sure. So I really appreciate you coming out here and doing this. Would you like to give out your information in case anybody needs an appraisal?
Oh, certainly.
Okay, Andrew.
It's Andrew Kaluzny, Kaluzny Appraisal Group. My phone number is 714-349-6535.
Awesome. Well, if anybody wants to talk to Andrew, you know how to contact him, or you can always contact me. And I really appreciate everybody listening. Please click on that subscribe button and subscribe to our channel. It helps us provide more valuable videos for you and information for you. And Andrew, again, thank you for coming in, and we'll talk again.
Thank you, Daryl.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Thanks for tuning in to The Jones Zone, your resource for building wealth and knowledge in everything real estate. If you found this information and insights shared in today's episode valuable, be sure to head over to iTunes to rate the show, leave a review, and subscribe so that you don't miss another episode. Remember, when it comes to real estate, knowledge is power. Stay informed and stay ahead of the game with us. I'll be back next week with even more expert advice and industry insights. Don't miss it. Thank you.